Welcome to a new edition of the Neon Jazz Interview Series with jazz composer, arranger, songwriter, and pianist, Rike Pantoja. We covered his new 2022 CD, Live in LA, COVID Life, and A Long Road in Music. Born and raised in Rio de Janeiro, at 19, he moved to Boston to study at the Berklee College of Music. These days, he's in Austin, Texas, but he was based in Los Angeles for nearly two decades and remains in demand worldwide for concerts, recordings, TV and film work, and advertising projects. His story is one you should hear. Enjoy.
Well, hey, thanks again for taking a minute out. I appreciate it.
Oh, no problem. I'm so excited that finally the project is officially out and you know, more people will get to hear it. That's great. So
yeah.
Thanks for your help.
Sure. Yeah, you bet. And so Live in LA, you know, of course we were away from live music for about 2 years. Things are opening up. So it has to be quite a celebration with everything opening up now. It's a live album. There has to be a lot that goes into this, a lot of relief and a lot of good feelings.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. We haven't been able to play much or to put any music out. But anyway, I mean, this part of what went on to the whole world. So we just had to adapt and in a way, try to keep, you know, positive and enthusiasm through this whole thing. And I'm glad it's kind of over now. I mean, at least for now, but we keep, you know, focusing the good stuff and making more music.
Talk to me about what went into this album. What was kind of the overall idea of capturing this performance to put on CD?
I recorded this live at this small theater in LA, and at a time where I had not, you know, I came from Brazil. I mean, you probably read a little bit or know a little bit about my background, right? So if you have any questions about that, we can talk about that. But basically, you know, in 91, I moved to L.A. from Brazil after, you know, going to living in Boston for 4 years and then moving to Paris, living 2.5 years in Europe, playing there when I was, you know, right out of school. And then after 10 years in Brazil, in 91, I decided to move to L.A. So this was like the first time, and I was playing in L.A. in clubs like Le Café was a club where a lot of, you know, great musicians. I played there, you know, with a bunch of different people, you know, Dave Wackel, Bob Shepard, Gene Earle, many, many great musicians. And I wanted to record some of the music that I had done prior in Brazil, but I never really had captured with that group of musicians, and actually including some new material I was writing at that time. So this was the force or the goal behind it. It's like, no, I need to capture this, not in the studio, but in the live setting where there's this dynamic interplaying and, you know, feeding from each other's ideas on the stage. And so that's what we went for, and I'm really, really happy with the result. You know, even it's been years that it's been released, I mean, the first time. I never officially released, and I only kind of made some CDs to sell in concerts because I was doing other projects, I was touring, and I don't know, but I want to have some of those CDs. So looking back, I still listen to it, and it sounds fresh. It sounds like a lot of energy. So,
yeah, absolutely. And we were missing that for quite a while. And speaking of missing it, you know, over this COVID time, you know, a lot of time at home, self-reflection, those kinds of things. What did you learn about yourself that maybe you didn't realize before this all happened that's going to make you a stronger musician as you promote this new album?
I mean, there are many aspects to this reflection on life, but obviously because things were stopped, and I'm also an educator, so I was teaching. I was still teaching online to two different universities, doing, you know, song production class, and I still had, you know, some piano students, some composition students. So I kept going online, and that's another side of musicality that I really like, you know, just the idea of passing on information and different concepts and aspects of, you know, music writing and music playing. So I kept that going. But if I could say on a broader sense of you know, life. Really, I can say that, you know, just the fact that you slow down and you stop for a minute and you have a chance to reflect on everything, on life, on family, on kids, on your music, where have you been and where your music can still go. It was a time for growth, in a way, in the sense that, you know, I have many, many sides of my music. It's not only Brazilian jazz or, you know, I like R&B. I write stuff that's classical, like Christopher Parkinney, who's one of the top guitar players in the world that plays with, you know, all the symphonic orchestras around the world. He records two of my compositions for guitars. And so I write, you know, kids songs sometimes, and I'm open. I don't have this thing. I'm just a jazz man, or even though I've played with Chet Baker and I've played, you know, with different jazz artists or pop artists, I never wanted really to feel, okay, I'm this and this is my label, this is what I do. So reflecting, just to, you know, wrap up your question, this whole season gave me a chance also to reflect in you know, my journey through life and even my spiritual journey and all that. So, you know, I should keep writing more music and not waiting until it's ready to be performed, but actually just release stuff, not waiting, you know, to have a record company or, and I have a lot of material that I've recorded through the years that I need to put out. So that's what's in my heart now, and my goal is like, okay, there's other projects of duet that I did with Justo Mario. You know, I have stuff that I recorded with Frank Gambale and other duets that I go, okay, I need to put this stuff out. That's regardless if I'm going to play in festivals or tour, you know, opportunities may open up, but the important thing is to touch the lives of people with the art, that with the gift that I've been given.
Talk to me about growing up in Rio de Janeiro, kind of how you became interested in jazz and being a musician, and kind of the just your upbringing there.
You know, Rio being a very cosmopolitan city, you know, I was exposed to a lot of music growing up. I came from a very musical family. My dad was not a professional pianist, but did the whole conservatory, you know, he could psych read anything and played all the way from, you know, Chopin, Debussy, Ravel, but he also played a lot of popular music. You know, he was an engineer, but influenced all of my family. We're six kids. I'm number four. All my brothers played piano and guitar. My sister, Celeste, was part of a famous all-girls pop band in Brazil. She played keyboard. So there was a lot of music in my house growing up and listening, you know, my parents loved, you know, the American Songbook, you know, Cole Porter, Frank Sinatra, you know, my mom loves Frank Sinatra. So, and at the same time, listening to a lot of Brazilian folk music and choros for guitar. I played guitar, was my first instrument until I was 13. From 8 to 13, I played classical guitar, I mean, Brazilian folk music. So there was a lot of music. And then I was exposed to, you know, the Beatles and other pop artists. So that was part of my musicality. And then when I was like 14, my brother brought home, you know, Bill Evans with Shelly Manne and Eddie Gomez album called Simple Matter of Conviction. And when I heard that, it totally blew my mind. He also brought another album of Chick Corea, Piano Improvisations, just solo piano. And I was mainly a guitar player. I was playing piano just by ear while my brothers were actually studying piano when I was 13. So that opened up a new window, and I go, wow, you know, how do they do that? How can they freely run through the keys and make all those chords. And so that's how I started my love for jazz music. And then from there, I started, you know, listening to other kinds of, you know, to George Benson and to some of the, you know, Sonny Rollins and then later Sonny Stitt. I really was into a lot of the saxophone players, even though I was mainly a, you know, guitar player and learning piano. And so I started learning, you know, listening to bebop and all that.
So what was the first live show that you saw that really blew you away?
In Brazil, there were not like lots of, you know, there were jazz clubs like Brazilian jazz that had bossa nova and live music. So when I was, you know, 17, 16, I went to some of those and I got really excited to see the interplaying among the musicians and all that. But when I came to the U.S. at 19, that's when I really started, you know, in Boston, there was, you know, the jazz, Pulse Malls and Jazz Workshop, two clubs next to each other. This was, you know, back in 75, 76. And there I sat next to Bill Evans playing, like, you know, 3 feet away from him playing, and I saw so many players, and that really became like a passion. I go, I really want to do this. I want to learn more. I want to learn how to improvise. And for me, I didn't have, you know, that technique yet. I was young, and I would walk through the practice rooms at Berkeley and see, you know, young players playing so much faster than I could play. And I go, but I was determined that I want to learn. So I took piano as my main instrument, even though I played guitar much better than I played piano when I came to Berkeley. But I wanted to be an arranger and composer. I was already writing, you know, simple songs, but I had... you know, my harmonic vocabulary, my chords were already very sophisticated because of Brazilian music, because I learned a lot of bossa novas and a lot of, and Brazilian music has that. That's why the marriage between, you know, when Stan Getz and other players, you know, started listening to some of the Brazilian bossa nova, there was a perfect marriage. I mean, the harmonies were great to blow on, to improvise. I was already writing, my first composition already had, you know, harmonies that were not just 2-5-1s. They were going to different places. So I was doing kind of by ear without really knowing the theory behind, you know, harmonic changes. And so from there, it was just, you know, a journey ahead of me that I really wanted to take.
Was it always a dream of yours to move to the United States and to come over here and further your career?
Yes. I did this after 4 years in Boston. I had an opportunity to go live in Paris. And there I put together a band playing mostly instrumental, most my own original music, but I played with other players there. I remember Egberto Gismonti, who's a great Brazilian pianist and composer, was in town playing with Naná Vasconcelos. Naná played with Pat Metheny. Naná played, you know, with many different bands, famous percussionist who's passed away. But I was young, and I met him when they came into town to play. And I said, man, I don't know what to do. I don't know if I, you know, just want to stay here. I learned all these things. I studied with Charlie Banat, who's this legendary teacher in Boston, outside Berkeley. And, you know, a lot of great players studied with Banat, you know, Mike Stern, Michael Brecker, Jeff Berlin. I mean, there were so many great musicians study under this guy. And so I had learned a lot of things, but my hands and my playing was not mature yet. I said, no, I don't want to go back to Brazil and just, you know, play there, play with pop singers. I want to learn more. So Naná really encouraged me and said, man, you've got to go to Paris. They love jazz and they love Brazilian music. You'll be working like the day after you get there. Trust me, go there. So I decided to move to Paris, you know, bringing a Fender Rhodes and a suitcase. Didn't know anyone. I had one phone number. And, you know, things you do when you're young, you go, okay, whatever, let me try that. It was a really great experience. And while I was there and put together this band that we played, almost every night for a year, and that's how I got to, end up working with Chet Baker and recording and then doing a tour in Italy with him at a very, very early age. And because Chet came to be just a part of the project we were recording and end up becoming his project, and he wanted to take the band on the road, playing mostly my music. For me as a young writer, this was huge. This was really an opportunity, an encouragement that, you know, someone like Chet that had played so many songs, so many melodies, go, hey, I like your music. So much so that even after I went back to Brazil, Chet recorded my music in Chet Baker in Tokyo. There's a version of Arbor Ways, my song. I mean, you can look up on YouTube, there are 3 or 4 different versions of Arbor Ways with Chet playing in Netherlands and Tokyo. And so that was a great experience. So to answer your question, yes, was part of my dream, you know, to go to the States and play. But later on, I came back to Brazil after some of those experiences.
You know, you play with Chet, you play with a lot of big names. You know, you've been on TV and commercial. There's been a lot of things that you've done. What have you learned over this time, you know, being around big environments, big musicians that you in turn use to teach younger players that you get around?
That's a big question, but, you know, what I learned is that, you know, we are given different gifts in life, and not to get too philosophical about it, but I believe the whole purpose of you having a gift, and that could be, you know, painting, dancing, not only artistic, I mean, there are physical gifts too, and the whole point is to make this, to be able to share this. So for me to have a gift and be creative and create music and only, you know, my family or a few people know about it, you lose the purpose of this gift. The gift is to be shared so this can, you know, touch the lives of people through beauty. So first of all, you know, the respect for art. So if I was given this gift and I had a chance to play with many great artists, I mean, no one becomes a great artist just because he knows some people in the industry. I mean, they have to work their craft. You agree? I mean, you have to spend time and dedicate and sacrifice. And through that experience, I've played with many great musicians and great people in my life, and I can see the value, and I learn from their dedication. And at the same time, many of people that we admire because they're great players, not necessarily they are great people. They have stuff in their lives, and you go, we all have to deal with things in our lives. But all that to say that I learned to appreciate the quality in art and how people can develop. And at the same time, I said there are other things in my life that are also very important. And they're, you know, at the personal level, it's, you know, family, people you love, people you develop friendship with them through life. So some people, like if you look at the life of John Coltrane and it's amazing. I have great respect and admiration for what they accomplished. You know, Michael Brecker and other great players. But when I read and learn stories about their lives, or even Chet Baker that I played with and I saw his personal life, and I go, okay, John Coltrane, at the end of his gig, he would go back home and still listen on a cassette everything he played, or he would go into a closet and play saxophone until 5 a.m. to get better and better. So he had another session to get better. And this is just my personal view on that. And he became, you know, the top. And that's amazing, and I respect that. But not necessarily, you know, reflect and go, I wouldn't want my life to be that. I mean, I know if I practiced and did everything that he did, probably I would be an even better musician. But then I sacrificed other aspects of my life, of being a father, of being a husband, of being, you know, a friend, and that needs time, that needs dedication, that needs spending time. That's my take on this. I learned a lot of great things, and I was inspired by great musicians to achieve that with a spirit of excellence and dedication. I still practice every day, or almost every day, and I still dedicate time to study orchestration, even though I'm not writing for an orchestra right now. But just that, my dedication to the arts, to the gift I was given. But I also dedicate time to my spiritual life, to to be, you know, a father, a friend, a grandpa now. So this is all very important to me. And I think music is an integral part of what I am, and it translates that. I mean, music is amazing because what you play is what you are. So there's joy, there's in my music, there's energy, there's at the same time, there's a romantic side, there's a longing. Anyway, that's a long answer.
No, that's good. No, that's great. So everyone has a perception of you, an idea of who they think you are, your family, your friends, your fans, but ultimately you live your life. Who do you think you are?
I think I'm a combination of, I'm not combination, but the result of all the things I loved in life and I still love, and the openness to embrace the new. So I think my identity has a lot to do with my spiritual life, you know, believing in God, you know, believing in Jesus, you know, what he taught. And I've went through many spiritual paths in my life, and this is what I think is a big part of who I am. So the things about life and the people that surrounded my life and my journey are the ones that helped me become who I am. And I'm a work in progress, so I don't claim to, you know, have accomplished anything amazing. I mean, I'm a musician and I love music, and this is how I express myself. But besides that, there's a whole other side that I'm blessed by the people that invested in my life, that invested time, that had meaningful conversations as I grew. You know, I'm over 60 now, so it's not like I want to be the new kid on the block. Yes, I want to be releasing new projects until my very last day. Because I love to write new things. I love to play with other musicians, with the younger musicians. And now I'm living in Austin, Texas. It's been a year that I've been here, even though I come back to L.A., you know, at least 1 week a month. And I'm going to be playing there, performing there at Vibrato again soon, in late June or July. But I'm meeting new people. I'm meeting people from the UT. There are some great big bands here. And I'm building new friendships. I'm excited, you know. I'm enthusiastic with this new season in my life.
Wonderful. Hey, man, thank you for taking a minute out for Neon Jazz today. Good luck with the album and the return to the stage. I appreciate it.
Awesome. Great talking to you, Joe.
Thanks for listening and tuning in to another Neon Jazz interview, where we give you a bit of insight into the finest players in Austin, Los Angeles, Kansas City, and spots all over the globe, giving fans all that jazz. And thanks to Rike for his time, music, and story. If you want to hear more interviews, go to Famous Interviews with Joe Domino on the iTunes Store. Visit neonjazz@youtube.com. And for everything Neon Jazz, go to the neonjazz.blogspot.com. And for everything Joe Domino related, go to joedomino.com. And if you feel like it, you can contribute through Patreon or PayPal to the Neon Jazz cause. Until next time, enjoy the jazz, my friends.
Neon Jazz.